Hello, and welcome to episode 61 of the Movie Marathoners podcast, part of the Evergreen Podcast Network. I'm your host, Mati, and joining me today are Rosa Parra and Catherine Gonzalez, the women behind the Latinx Lens podcast. Welcome to the podcast. Thank you for joining me. How's everyone's weekend?
Hello. thank you. Thank you for having me back. I'm doing great. And it's fun. I'm really happy to be back. And now with my partner in crime, I'm more excited to be here.
Yeah, really excited to have you both. Catherine, how are you doing?
I'm good. Yeah, it's been a good weekend. I had biscuits for breakfast, which I hadn't had in a long time because I've been, you know, eating well. So that was very, I'm having a good day.
Awesome. Well, Rosa, you've been on the podcast before once to talk about an amazing film, Portrait of a Lady on Fire. And then again to talk about a less than amazing film, The Lovebirds. But both of those conversations were great. I highly recommend checking those out. I'm very excited to have you back and to have Catherine on for the first time, especially this week, because out of nowhere, the weekend of September 4th became this huge week for movies. We got Tenet in theaters, a new Charlie Kaufman film on Netflix, and then the topic for this week, the highly anticipated film, Disney's Mulan. So as usual, we'll warm up with our spoiler-free thoughts on the film, then we'll run into spoiler territory where we can talk freely about the film. And finally, we'll finish with our point two section where we talk about what else we've been watching. So let's just jump right into it and read a synopsis of Mulan. Very straight to the point, this one. A young Chinese maiden disguises herself as a male warrior in order to save her father. Mulan stars Yifei Liu, Donnie Yen, Li Gong, and Jet Li. It is written by Rick Jaffa, Amanda Silver, Lauren Hynek, and Elizabeth Martin, and it is directed by Nikki Caro.
Do you know why the Phoenix sits on the right hand of the Emperor? She is his guardian, his protector. That she's both beautiful and strong. Your job is to bring honor to the family. Do you think you can do that?
Citizens, we are under attack from northern invaders.
Their leader calls himself Ori Khan.
Fights alongside a witch.
No survivors.
By edict of his Imperial Majesty, every family must contribute one man to fight.
Have you no son?
I am blessed with two daughters. I will fight.
Be strong. This time he will not return.
So why don't we just start with overall thoughts on the film, and I'll go to Catherine first since she is the newest addition to the guest rotation. Catherine, what were your overall thoughts on Mulan?
Yeah, I really wanted to love this movie because of the live action aspect, and I really liked the fact that they were going in a different direction than the animated film by doing something new, which I guess some people don't like that. Mm-hmm. But for me, I was like, ooh, that's pretty awesome. Because I kind of am irked by the live action Disney films that are basically just copying the cartoon and not bringing anything new. So with that said, I was a little disappointed. Just because I feel like there was a lot of pretty pictures. It was, you know, the landscape shot, everything. Mm-hmm. But it just felt like it lacked like the nuance in some ways. I feel like it didn't have the spirit of the original animated film. And I don't know. I just feel like it was sort of bland in some ways. And yeah, and for a film where Mulan is this, you know, crazy warrior, the action scenes like left a lot to be desired. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I liked some of the things that they did with some of the storylines, but overall it was just okay. And I think when I was watching, I was like, oh, I'm going to forget about this after I watch it, basically, which is not good for a Disney film because growing up, I watched the Disney movies like over and over and over and over again. Cause that's, you know, when you're a kid, you do that. And like even some of the live action ones, I wish I could, I wanted that feeling from the nostalgic point of view, you know, of watching this when I was younger, like the original one. So I don't think it had that like it factor that I expect from kind of like a Disney movie, unfortunately.
So do you have nostalgia for that original film, the 1998 animated one? I feel like some people are at the age where it kind of like just missed their childhood in the sense that like they don't really care about it. And then there's other people like me where I kind of grew up watching this film and singing the songs, you know, in middle school and high school. Which one are you?
Yeah, I think it was 98, so I was 10. So it hit like right when I was probably still into all these Disney movies. And for me, I just feel like, especially now with all these live action remakes, I feel like the 90s were the heyday of Disney animated films, which I'm lucky, and maybe all of us are, to have grown up with those films and not these live action ones. But yeah, I love that one. I mean, honestly, I still listen to a lot of the Disney soundtracks, like when I go on a run or a walk, and like Make a Man Out of You is one of my favorites. And I actually just put on the Mulan movie, I mean the Disney animated version after this one, because I was like, I really wanted that like spirit of the movie, and I was just fast forwarding to all the to all the song parts.
Yeah, awesome. Rosa, how about you? What were your thoughts on the live action Mulan?
Yeah, I liked it. I had fun with it. I thought the bold decision to sway away from the musical genre and give it this more serious tone to it, it worked for me. No, it's not a perfect film. I did have some issues, especially with the script and some of the pacing. But other than that, I very much enjoyed it. I liked the visual. The visuals were really beautiful. The vibrant colors, the costume designs were good. I liked it. Overall, I really enjoyed it. And I do agree with Kat. It was missing that magic. Then I'm sure it has a lot to do with not having the musical numbers and having that comedy to it. But overall, I had a good time with it. I enjoyed it. Personally, I think it's one of the best live action remakes. Mm-hmm. But I enjoyed it. I had a good time with it.
Okay. I'm glad to hear that. So I was talking a little bit before we started recording to you, Rosa, about how I kind of knew your thoughts. And I knew your thoughts because I saw your Letterboxd rating of the movie. And I am much closer to Catherine's opinion of the movie. I really, like, just like her, I really, really wanted to like this film. I thought the trailers looked great, and I was actually really excited for them not doing a shot-for-shot remake. So none of my problems are, oh, there's no Mushu in this. So I really, really wanted to love this, and I found myself just really disappointed by it. And so after that, I checked your Letterboxd to see what you had said, and you had 4 stars on it. So I was like, oh, crap, am I going to be just a huge negative person on this podcast? So, Catherine, thank you for...
You're welcome. I mean, I don't want to be I am sad that this is my takeaway from this, because I really think they missed an opportunity, but it is what it is. I'm not going to lie about how I feel about it. So
yeah, that's how I felt. And I mean, I agree with a lot of what Rosa said in that there are a lot of things to like in this movie. I just think so many of them are just not quite good enough so that when they all come together, the movie feels just kind of weak. And it's just missing that magic. It's missing, honestly, some narrative structural flow. It's missing a lot of fluid editing. I think one of the most frustrating things of this film is that action and how... I don't want to say poorly, but I guess poorly shot it is. It's edited to pieces so that you really can't appreciate anything that's going on. And then the script is really wonky, in my opinion. Like, just how you get from scene to scene is very frustrating in this movie. And I think I might be a little harder on it just because I did want this to kind of be the best of the Disney live action films. And I think it probably is still one of the best ones. There, like I said, there's a lot of things to really appreciate about this movie that I'm sure we'll get into. But yeah, for me, it didn't work much at all.
That's fair. I've been reading a lot of reviews on it, and it's fair. It's completely understandable. Again, you know, film is subjective, and whatever works for people might not work for other people. And it's completely fair.
Yeah, and I just think it also, for some reason, I guess I hadn't really done a lot of research until I was prepping for this podcast, and who had written it and who directed it. And then when I saw that, I guess I just thought I gave Disney the benefit of the doubt that it was from creators who would know more about the, you know, like I thought they were trying to really push for the diversity angle or whatever. And we've talked a lot about on Latinx Lens, like I am not opposed to like non-POC doing like these type of interpretations of different cultures and things. I think that's part of writing, is like being creative and also writing outside of what you know. But in this case, I feel like it definitely, maybe that hindered what the product that we saw. And I don't know how much of a consulting like they did for some, you know, for like to get more of the richness of the culture. Because it definitely felt like a Cliff Notes version of whatever they were trying to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I feel like it could have really benefited from people who knew more about it, you know, like part of that culture and just adding a little bit more richness to it. So that's where it kind of, I don't know. It just missed the mark in that end.
Yeah, I agree with you. I do want to acknowledge that I like that it's at least trying to be authentic in the way that it's portraying Chinese production and Chinese mm-hmm. culture. Like you can tell that there is an effort there, but there is something notable about the fact that the director and all four of the writers are white. And yeah. I mean, it's good that a majority of the writers and the director are women. I think that you can feel in the film. There is a level that the film handles gender dynamics in a way that I think feels pretty good. But I mm-hmm. agree that it just doesn't quite feel, I think the way you said it is perfect. The Spark Notes version of this movie, like it tries to hit these things like family and honor and things that are important in this myth to the Chinese culture and introducing this idea of qi and all of this stuff. But none of it comes together in a way that's particularly interesting to me.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, no. I certainly agree with the both of you. And I watched the film again. I watched it again last night, but this time I watched it with my daughters. And after I did realize that it was just written and pretty much just produced by white creators, yeah, you can definitely see it. And after seeing it a second time, it does not hold up as it did when I first watched it. And after watching it last night again, my score did go down a little. Now it's at 3.5, but it didn't go down by much. I still liked it. And I'm very happy with the message that it's sending. But yeah. No, absolutely. I'm right there with the both of you. Now, because I liked it doesn't mean that I'm not aware of what's going on and all the controversial things that are going on with the film as well.
Yeah, well, I don't want to be completely negative because, like I said, I think there are a bunch of things in this movie that are, if not executed perfectly, it's admirable that they're at least trying to execute those things. Like, they introduce new characters, which is something that almost none of the live action movies have done. And I think a lot of those characters are pretty interesting. You've got Gong Li's character, who is this sorceress woman, who I think is handled really poorly at the end of this film. But the introduction of her as kind of a foil or whatever to Mulan's character, that is interesting in theory. But Rosa, do you want to talk about specific things that you really liked about the film, kind of to avoid getting us into a super negative dive into this?
Yes, of course. And I think that's perhaps the perfect segue for me, because out of this film, she was my favorite character. I wasn't even Mulan. I like what they did. And again, it goes back to what you guys were mentioning. The female lens is very much visible in this film. And her introduction, the introduction of this character, it worked for me. It very much worked for me. And I understand a lot of people don't... They tend to argue or question some of the actions or of course the ending the towards the end of the film, but to me it worked. It worked in a sense that her character is certainly another version of an outcome of the outcome of what women have to put up with, certainly within the society and how women have always been just looked as villain. Simply for having certain capabilities and having powers, so to speak. And all of that spoke to me on every single level, the female empowerment aspect of it. And I think her introduction to the movie, it certainly umped up that message a little bit more, because she is, again, another story of what women go through. But she's also the representation. She's part of like the yin and the yang to Mulan, and maybe also a reminder of what Mulan may have perhaps become if she didn't become one towards the end. But I liked it. I loved it. I loved her character overall. Like I said, it was my favorite part of the film.
Yeah, Catherine, what do you think about that character and how that whole relationship worked out in the film?
Yeah, she was the highlight probably as well for me, because I think one of the reasons why I feel the way I do is that in the animated version, Mulan really shined as a character. You got her personality. You knew who she, what she was about. In this one, I felt like sometimes I was like, oh, you haven't even spoken in some of these yeah. things. And I'm like, I really wanted, it made me feel like she was the secondary character, to be honest. And I think that's the reason why I was like, oh, you know, feel the way I do. But seeing Gong Li's, like kind of being, I guess, the foil to Mulan, it was awesome. Like, I think having that addition and interpreting, I guess, was like a, what was the animal she is? Like a
falcon or a hawk or something, maybe?
Yeah, that was really cool. I like the way she would kind of come in and out, and like the way they did that with all the birds and stuff. That was pretty awesome. So I didn't mind that. And I also think, although it is sad to think that having two women like as like, you know, the protagonist and also, you know, the, I guess, a villain type thing or whatever in a movie is like refreshing. I hope this is just kind of another, a thing that continues, because we've seen it now with like more of the action movies, with women against women. It's sort of like, it's fun because we've had men against men for so long and that's just considered normal. And it's like, if you introduce, like, I don't know why people have thought introducing a, you know, like kind of like the Gong Li's character would make it less than or something, but it makes it much more nuanced, especially the conversation they have of, like the empathy that she feels. And she's like, just join me so we can be together and like take down the patriarchy yeah. and stuff like that. So I found that very interesting. And it was definitely probably the highlight of the film for me as well.
Yeah, I love the way that she looks, like her just design, mm-hmm. her character design, the scales on her dress and everything. That is something that's so good. I think this movie needed much more of, just kind of this flashy and iconic imagery in a way. And she is probably the most iconic part of this new movie. And you mentioned something that I want to touch on, the idea that Mulan doesn't feel quite as animated or as much of a character in this as she does in the animated film. And I was thinking about that and kind of how these animated or these adaptations of these animated films are almost doomed from the start, because you have such a rich character from an animated movie, but it's kind of unfair almost to ask mm-hmm. people to compare an animated character to a live action character, because an animated character just naturally is able to emote and do so much with so much less. And I think you can really tell that when you think about the side characters in this movie, like her kind of posse or whatever in the army, how it's very yeah. clear that they're supposed to be the same characters as in the original film. You've got like the huge guy who really likes to eat, and you've got the short stubby guy with like the scowl and all that stuff. And in the animated movie, I think it really works because you can remember those characters iconically just because they look larger than life, or in the small guy's case, smaller than life. Like, they have these characteristics just from the way that they're animated. And I think mm-hmm. unless you have an incredibly talented actor, that's very difficult to do in a live action film when they're given so little time to actually be characters. And I think that is one of the weaknesses of this film, and to an extent, a lot of the live action Disney movies.
Yeah. And I guess, I don't know if Russa feels this way too, but like live action can be done well. Like we reviewed Dora, the Lost City of Gold, recently. And I think that benefited from the fact that they really went in a sort of like the fantastical route to really mimic mm-hmm. the cartoon. And that was like a good interpretation, because then you're, as an audience member, you're like, okay, well, this is still a fantastical world, but it is live action, whatever. And I think with Mulan, I didn't expect Mulan to be the same. I just feel like there's literally no personality in some ways. Mm-hmm. It's like very subtle. And I don't know. It just felt like they could, they were in the middle between trying to be Disney-like, trying to be, a little bit too like historical in some ways. And I think it just, they didn't strike the right balance of deciding what they wanted to be. And then it felt, that's why for me, it felt kind of like just half effort in that sense. Cause I'm like, what are you trying to do? If you're going to try to be like a straight drama, I'll go for it. But you didn't go all in.
Yes.
If you're trying to still take the, if you're still trying to have that, like, you know, the Disney cues, the music, all that, then I wish you would have done like kind of a Dora route and do it more fantastical, even more vibrant colors, like and do more of like the witch and like iconic imagery that you were talking about that is more striking. Because Mulan's like outfits and stuff, it just felt like it didn't do her justice in some ways.
Yeah, and then you think of some of the most iconic movies or the most iconic shots in the original movie, like the fighting montage, which is a little unfair because that song is amazing, but that's one example. Another example is when they come to the village that has been completely decimated by the Huns. That is a terrifying moment in a children's movie, but it's really effective, and it has that imagery of Mulan laying down the little doll next to the sword of the guy's father. Like, that stuff is, I remember that even though I haven't seen this movie in several years. And I don't feel like there's any of those iconic movies in this one. And like, they have that moment where they go and see the results of whatever the name of the army is in this one. It's not the Huns, but they have a similar scene, but it's just blown by so quickly. And it's sort of like, check, we did that, let's move on. And this movie does that a lot, where it's kind of like introduces something and then the resolution is almost instantaneous and they just move on. And it's like they don't have time to feel anything.
Yeah, I agree.
Oh, yeah, the scene that you're referring to, it certainly feels like that because there's no musical numbers. Right before that scene, they're singing, and they are singing the song of someone to worth fighting for, or whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm not a good singer, so I'm not even going to attempt it. so yeah, you're going from a joyous and a musical number, and the next scene is them coming up to that scene. And of course that gives it more impact because you're going from a happy and then boom, you get shocked with the scene. So definitely the lack of the musical numbers did affect the film. It doesn't have that magic. It doesn't have what the first, what the animated film does. And again, I said it wasn't perfect. I was bothered by some of the, including the script, but using some of the song lyrics as a dialogue felt mm-hmm. so flat to me. It didn't work. It didn't work at all. And yeah, it definitely takes away a lot of the emotional impact that it could have had.
So Rosa, you mentioned that you watched this again with your daughters, and mm-hmm. I think one of the things that is really savvy on Disney's part is that they're saying, okay, you buy this for $30 and then you can watch it again and again. And especially for families, that seems like a no-brainer. But yeah. This movie is also, it's not Frozen 2. This doesn't seem like a movie that, for example, five-year-olds would watch again and again and again. Do you right. think that you're going to get mileage out of this? Then this is a film that you think your kids would watch again and again? Or is it one of those ones that's like, well, you know, we're starving for content, so $30 is enough for us to watch it once and then that's worth it?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because while we were watching it, yeah, my seven-year-old, again, she's already having issues at school with the long distancing. this film didn't work for her. So it doesn't, there is no funny mushu. There's no, nothing attractive and nothing kept her attention. But the other three, though, they did like it. And they've already seen it twice ever since that last night. So I guess it depends on the age they're in. And when I'm saying my older three, I'm talking about 9, 11, and 14. Mm-hmm. So they're a bit older. They do understand some of these themes and topics. So to me, again, it's a family. I'm going to have a huge family. So $30 is nothing compared to spending almost $100 every time I go to the movie theaters with my kids. But yeah, for the little ones, I don't think it's going to work as well. And yeah, I mean, so far they've seen it twice already. The three older ones, the little ones can give zero F's about it. but overall, I think so. Again, it depends on the kids as well.
So Catherine, even if you didn't like it as much as you wanted to, is this worth the $30? Because we have now collectively given Disney $90 to see this, assuming that we didn't get screeners or whatever. But is this worth the $30 to you, do you think?
I think, so as much as I've like been negative about it, it's just because I really wanted, I just expected a little bit more from Disney and especially Mulan, you know, and the first like kind of big Asian cast and everything and the push for diversity and all that. But I will say like, it's not a horrible movie. Like I guess I could watch it again. And maybe I like putting movies on in the background because I love movies. So I do that instead of music. So I could see myself like putting it on and then probably like stopping what I'm doing and watching a little bit of it at a time, you know. And I think it could be like a kick where I, you know, even as an adult, because I think this is also probably targeted to us, you know, who grew up, you know, like the strong nostalgic feelings of watching the original Mulan and then kind of getting that, the nostalgic feeling for us to buy it again, to feel those feelings. And so I will say just because given everything, the pandemic, content and wanting to feel somewhat of that nostalgic feeling, at least in my case, I would recommend it. I don't think it's not bad, like that bad. I'm just being a little bit harsh on it because we're critiquing it for this sense. But if you're a family and you need, you know, you have those older kids, like Rosa said, I think you would probably want to give it a shot just so you can have a few hours to yourself.
Yeah, perfectly fair. So do you think that this would have worked in a theater? Would you have been harder on the film if it was in a theater? Or do you think it would have actually been less of a big deal that it doesn't quite live up to our expectations if we saw it on the big screen and we got to see Nikki Caro's direction of the big landscapes and stuff? Because that's the thing. I think you mentioned that as one of your first things that, yeah, it's got pretty shots in it. And I did feel a little bummed that I wasn't getting to see some of that stuff on a big screen.
Yeah. And learning that she's New Zealander, it actually was fun because Lord of the Rings is one of my favorite movies. And I feel like it was shot in New Zealand. I don't know where it's shot. But like a lot of the landscape actually reminded me of Lord of the Rings. That's probably why I loved it so much. And it might have been different. I think anything in the theater is always, especially when it's like epic in scope in that sense of showing these epic shots of landscape that is so beautiful. I think you can't help, even if the script or the movie is weak, you can't help as a viewer just kind of like get immersed in it and want to be there. And it kind of maybe skews your overall feelings in a way by seeing it on the big screen. Cause regardless of when I go see a movie in the theater, like if I see a movie in a theater and it's kind of like, eh, I still have that like bit of high from watching a movie and having those feelings of like escaping for 2 hours. And I feel like it could have benefited from it being, yeah, for me watching it in a theater. I think I might've felt a little differently, and then maybe watching it again at home might have made me feel this way that I feel now. Possibly. I don't know. It's like, what if, right?
Yeah. It's funny that you mentioned Lord of the Rings, because I felt myself comparing Lord of the Rings to this probably unfairly and definitely unfavorably, because I did recently watch those. And there's something about the way that the action in that movie is, specifically the like the war scenes, the way that it is shot and the way that it is set up to, not only do you understand what's going on because you can see it being filmed relatively fluidly, but they also spend like 35 minutes before the battle kind of explaining what's at stake, explaining who's coming, explaining who's where. And this movie doesn't do any of that. And I do think on one level, okay, comparing it to literally one of the greatest trilogies of all time, not super fair. But at the same time, this movie is what, like, $200 million or something. So
yeah, exactly.
It's not super unfair to expect at least some grand scale epicness other than just, wow, that's a pretty mountain. And it is a pretty mountain, but there's never any of these sweeping battle shots. So like, where is the money going?
Yeah. And I agree. Yeah, I agree with that. And also I think I'm probably a little bit more harsh on it with those action scenes, because when TV shows are doing it better than a movie that has $200 million, you know, like Game of Thrones did battle scenes so well. That's the most recent example, but that now there's a lot more, even Vikings, the TV show, I feel like I would have preferred that action more so than whatever I got here. Mulan's like moves were really cool in some of the instances, but I wanted more of that. And so, yeah, you're right. I think it's not like it was a $20 million, but if it had been $20 million, I'd be like, oh, they did pretty well for that. But it's Disney's money. And it's like, you couldn't get a better choreographer, or I don't know, like what was going on? You weren't utilizing your talent very well.
Well, let's go ahead and hop into spoilers. I think we've made it clear that there's a lot to like about this movie, and then there's a lot that doesn't work, at least for some of us. So, Rosa, why don't you summarize your thoughts on the film and give it a score out of 10, and then we'll have Catherine do the same, and then we'll move into spoilers.
Yeah, sure. So to me, this film is visually stunning, and it definitely falls short from the animated predecessors. So overall, I enjoyed it. I liked it. And my score is a 7 out of 10.
Awesome. How about you, Catherine?
Yeah, I think it's going to be just an okay watch. I don't think it's going to be memorable, except for The Witch, which I think there's going to be a lot of little... I even want to dress up as her for Halloween. So I think that will probably be the lasting legacy, maybe in that sense. And so I would just say 6 out of 10.
Okay.
Because it did try to do something different, which I appreciate, and not a copy for copy of the animated film. So I can appreciate the effort, but it did fall short.
Yeah, I'm really glad this movie is trying to be something other than a shot-for-shot remake. Unfortunately, overall, it largely fails, but I'd much rather see a film like this than just a lifeless remake of the original that's trying to do the funny Mushu with somebody who's trying to imitate
Eddie Murphy.
And somebody who's trying to sing as good of a montage song. So I think that this film is definitely attempting to say something. It's attempting to be different from the original, and it's attempting to create these new and interesting characters. And I respect it for that. So this is not something that is like a waste of time or anything like that. And it is in the upper echelon, in my opinion, of the Disney live action films. I'm going to give it just a little lower than Catherine. I'm going to give it a 5.5. But if you're interested, it's still Mulan. So that's the thing with these Disney action movies. So with that, let's go ahead and move into spoilers. This is a spoiler warning for Mulan starting now.
That's my secret, Cat. I'm always angry.
So one of the things that they add to this film is the idea of chi. Was not in the original animated film, but I'm assuming, I guess I could have checked this, but I'm assuming it's quite significant in the original, whatever you call it, myth of Mulan. What were your guys' thoughts on the inclusion of this chi character and kind of making Mulan in some ways reminded me of like Anakin in the prequels for Star Wars?
Rosa, you can go if you want.
Okay. I didn't mind it. I didn't mind it at all. I think giving her that element kind of was the substitute for no Mushu, for no Cricket, and for not having any of the comedic talent elements in it. I didn't mind it because with the introduction of the sorcerer, I think it made more of a complementary matchup with her, since she also has these powers, so to speak. So to me, it was okay. I didn't mind it. I read a lot of reviews that did mind it. But overall, I didn't mind it. I was good with it. And no, I do not think that this film is giving the message that women or girls are only special or anything like that only when they have these mystical powers. I think that the message of the film here is to do not impersonate other people and try to, how do you call it, just to be part of society. Just be yourself and go out there, and which is one of the changes that I really appreciated about the film. In the animated film, Mulan is discovered to be a woman because of her injuries, and then they figure out because of her body anatomy. But in this one, no, she decides to come out. She decides to fully embrace who she is and to take, just go out there and kick ass pretty much, which is something I very, very much appreciated.
I like how you word that, that it was kind of, they changed it from her being exposed to her kind of taking control of her identity and choosing mm-hmm. to be exposed. And I did not think of it like that. And I think that is, that's a good change. And I think also the idea of this chi, it kind of reminded me of in Captain Marvel when Jude Law is kind of consistently telling her to suppress her powers and don't mm-hmm. be emotional. And that's obviously very on the nose, but it is effective. And I think the scene at the very beginning of this movie where Shima, her dad, has to tell Mulan to hide her gift. And he says something like, you know, hide your talent. Don't show this. This is not for you. It's for warriors. I thought that was actually a very effective scene. And Shima very, very much sold it. And I thought it was emotional and powerful and upsetting. I just wish that that emotion kind of continued through the film. Like, I don't think that it exactly capitalizes it on it at the end. Again, it almost pulls it off, but it just falls a little short for me. But I do think that's a really good part of this film. So speaking of the ending, let's go ahead and talk a little bit about Xian Liang and Mulan's ultimate emotional conclusion, I guess, the relationship concluding where Xian Liang kind of sacrifices herself to save Mulan. Did that work for you, Catherine?
Yeah, I love that part. I think... So I don't know if I'm a little cynical just because of everything I've watched so far. But for me, when there's no stakes or there's just like everyone comes out alive in some ways, even in the superhero movies, it kind of just is like, eh, you know. And I understand this can be different because it's Disney and obviously maybe you don't want to show that to kids. But I think it just kind of redeemed, maybe in some ways it redeemed her character of like whatever she has done. You know, helping the bad side in some ways. And I felt like for her, that was her way of really trying to maybe just try to right her wrongs. And I love that. I think when people, when there's characters who sacrifice themselves, even when they've been on the other side for like the main character or whatever, it just hits, you know, and it hits hard. And so for me, that was a scene that really worked. And I don't know. I really enjoyed that storyline and the way it concluded, because I mean, she is probably, like we mentioned, one of the iconic characters in this that will be remembered. And I love when iconic characters have an even more iconic death. So in that sense, I think it really did justice to her overall character and what they were trying to do with her.
Okay. Yeah. For some reason, I just didn't feel like I wish they had more interactions, the two of them. I thought that, it just felt pretty quick for her to kind of turn on the guy. I also didn't totally understand why she was working with him in the first place. There, like the relationship between the Xian Liang and can't even remember the quote unquote main villain, whatever his name is. But I thought it was kind of bizarre that she was not the main villain. I don't think that I needed this other random guy.
Yeah. I mean, that's where the story is just lacking. There wasn't a lot of explanation like you mentioned earlier, which kind of, that's why it's kind of bland in some ways, because you're like, it's just making you going from scene to scene like feel this, and it's like, well, you got to give me a little bit to go on.
Yeah,
well, I don't know if it was in the movie or not, but it says that she comes to be with him with the character of Jason Scott Lee, because of course she's a woman, she's called a witch, which I very much hated that term. So he saw the opportunity to use somebody of her power. So he asked her, in order for him to get her help, he was gonna pretty much, I don't know, accept her or somehow embrace who she was in order for her to, I don't know, find, because apparently she had been exiled for who she was, for being a powerful woman, for having all these different abilities. So in that sense, her death very much did work for me as well. It's perhaps, like Kat said, one of the most memorable things about that character. And It worked for me because, again, it's women, women recognizing powerful women. And at the end of the day, women helping women out. And I think I've read somewhere where they said, well, if she was such a villain or she wanted to help Mulan, why didn't she kill the guy himself and somehow made Mulan one of his guards or something? But ultimately, I think it was a form, like Kat said, to redeem herself, redeem everything she's done. And if she would have killed the villain, I don't think she would have been immediately accepted, unlike the way Mulan was, because at the end of the day, she did do a lot of horrific things throughout the film. So I don't think that it would have been a wise decision on her part either. So to me, it did work. And again, my favorite character of the film for that reason. It just further enhances the message of female empowerment.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's a really good message. And I think that the film does heavily rely on you, like, knowing that that is, I don't know if this is the right way to say this, but knowing that that's a thing that you want to happen. Like, you want her to be redeemed and you want her to side with Mulan. And I think the script is not quite strong enough for it to totally connect for me, even though it is the thing that I know I want to happen. And it's the thing that when I see, oh, okay, so they're empowering each other, that's a good thing, that's the thing I want. But just kind of getting from A to B is a little weak for me in terms of how little screen time she has between being this ruthless killer and then going to this more or less redemption arc. It doesn't super work for me, but I do like the message that comes from that relationship, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's fair. I agree. The script was pretty much weak. I guess it wasn't weak enough for me, not to get to me. It worked for me, but no, I understand everything that's going against this, and I'm just waiting either for people to tell me that I'm either paid by Disney and I'm getting these checks from them because I'm getting a positive review, or for people to tell you that you're anti-feminist because you didn't like the film. So either way, we're
my biggest nightmare. Don't joke about that. No, I mean, I'll get paid by Disney. If Disney wants to write me a check, no. I'll say whatever. It is very clear that, you know, I think one of the things that's really easy to forget about film criticism is that, like, you can have problems with something and still love it, and you can still really not like it and have things that you like about it. So it's,
yeah,
believe it or not, it's not black and white.
Yeah.
yeah. And I think what we're having here, I find it very intriguing because I think we're everywhere in the scale. I tend to like it a little bit more. Kat's up in the middle and you're on the other end. But it just shows that the subjectivity of film, that all of us are just going to be seeing this, our perceptions of the film is going to be different. And there's nothing wrong with that. And unfortunately, a lot of people don't tend to grasp that concept.
Yeah. And it's funny too, because I think like me and Maddie wanted to love it. It's just like, and I think that's the reason why I feel this way, is because it's like, oh, I could see the potential, you know, and that's what makes me disappointed in it. Because there were storylines, like, you know, the fact that I love the shift that hopefully we're doing with the villains, of there's not just good and bad now. It's very nuanced. And I like when you can empathize with the villains, quote unquote, just like we did with Killmonger and Black Panther. Mm-hmm. You know, I could see that side of him, you know, of, oh, you have some reason to do what you're doing. I may not agree the way you're doing it, but you're not super bad, you know, like there is that kind of thing. And then same way that I felt with the, you know, Gong Li's the witch in this one, like I could see like the way she was ostracized and what she had to do to kind of survive, and you can't blame someone for that, you know. So I think I like the shift in that. So I think that was actually pretty progressive on Disney's part, maybe, to not make it so like villain, bad, good.
Yeah.
And that's also, like you said, I think if they had taken out the Hun-like character, although I did like Jason Scott Lee as the evil dude, he was pretty good, but his storyline was not giving him what he needed to do to really like pull it off. But if they had just made her the main one and have those very nuanced conversations between like the good, bad, whatever, that would have been really a much more interesting movie, I think, more powerful, given all the female empowerment this film had.
Yeah, I almost wanted more dialogue between all the characters.
Yes. There was just very little.
Yeah. It's like they almost are just doing the bare minimum so that they can say that, yes, technically we talked about this, so now you should be able to understand that this character feels a different way. And to, like, in defense of this movie, I think a lot of blockbusters and modern blockbusters nowadays do that, where they kind of just give lip service to these things, and then so that they can say, okay, this is the theme, and let's just get to the part where Jet Li is using different curtains to mess some people up, which, like, is cool, but it just isn't quite as effective if you don't have the dialogue to back up everything that is supposed to have weight in this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Are there any standout moments that you want to mention in spoilers before we move on?
Standout moments. I think we just talked about it. Her, the sorcerer's death. Unfortunately, that's the only thing that stands out to me. Yeah. And you know what? Actually, the ending that kind of left a little bit of a cliffhanger, because you're not sure what's going to happen with Mulan, if she's either going to accept a proposal of the Emperor or not. That was kind of interesting, actually, that they made that decision to end it that way.
The most exciting moment for the whole film for me was seeing Ming-Na Wen cameo at the very end.
Yes.
She is the so Ming-Na good. Wen is the original voice actress behind Mulan. She's mm-hmm. also on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and a bunch of other things. But she was the woman that walked Mulan up to talk to the Emperor at the very end. And I jumped up in my seat and got a bolt of energy from it. It was a cool little cameo.
Yeah, I love her so much. And I feel like she has such a strong presence, and she's such a good actress that I almost wish that this had been, like, she would have been able to portray Mulan in the live action version, just because I feel like she could have, like, really brought some, you know, her awesomeness to it. So I don't know. That also made me a little sad, but I liked that callback. It was really nice of them to do that and bring her back, because, I mean, she kind of paved the way, and she's done so much also, in all her other roles that she's done, and just being such a badass at what she portrays and stuff. So I loved it.
It is so funny to see her out of character, because, I mean, I'm used to seeing her in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. as Melinda May, who is an absolute badass. She doesn't mess around at all. But then if you see her in interviews and stuff, she's almost this, like, suburban mom kind of into Instagram, and very just has a completely different energy. It really speaks to the type of actress she is. I love Ming-Na Wen. I would definitely watch mm-hmm. her just be Mulan, like an older Mulan or something. I couldn't.
Yeah. She should have been like her mentor.
Yeah.
The training mentor. That would have been cool.
Yeah. So with that, let's go ahead and move on to our point two section, where we talk about some of the other stuff that we've been watching. Catherine, we can start with you. What have you been watching?
Yeah, so there was actually a lot to watch this weekend, mm-hmm. but I'm just going to focus on, I watch a lot of TV as well. So on September 4th, The Boys season 2, that's on Amazon Prime, dropped the first 3 episodes. They're going to be doing, after that, they're going to be dropping, I think, 5 more. It's only 8 episodes. And it's kind of like not anti-superhero-ish type show, but it's very out there. It's like not your mom superheroes. But I saw season 1 last year, and I loved it, and so I'm watching that. And it's also based, like, on comic books, but I don't know any, I haven't read any of that, so I'm just going off what the show's, you know, just from a TV show viewer. So that's what I've been watching.
Yeah, I'm going to be reviewing season 2 in a couple of weeks with some people from the Bingeables podcast. They're coming on to review that. So I'm really excited for that. I was actually completely under the impression that the entire season dropped on September 4th. So it actually makes mm-hmm. it a little easier to not have to watch everything really quickly before reviewing. But I'm with you. I haven't seen the first couple episodes yet, but I loved season 1. I thought it did a perfect job at making superheroes realistic and being really jaded and nihilistic about the whole thing, but also still having fun and it being kind of funny. And there's some ridiculous stuff that happens that, like, especially with what's Chase Crawford is the deep?
Yes, the deep.
Mm-hmm. His whole character and his love of dolphins and all of that stuff. So good.
Oh my God.
Do you think that?
Yeah, well, season two is even better.
Do you think that the second season holds up so far?
Yes, it does. And I've actually had the opportunity to watch up to 6 episodes so far.
Oh, great.
And I will say, just for people who maybe watch the first season and then go into the 3-episode premiere, you need to watch all 3 at the same time because it felt like a 3-hour premiere. I think this is just the new wave of maybe TV, because there was another show, Raised by Wolves, that I also watched and I would recommend, that dropped 3 episodes at the same time. So I think it's maybe just a new trend in TV show releases. And then it really picks up from there and it's a wild ride and I love it. And I kind of love that they're kind of also doubling down on certain aspects. But they're also just talking so much, like it is really pulling from society's like headlines, and you can make a case for certain storylines, just like kind of mimicking like the Me Too movement, politics, just everything. And so it's very interesting to see through the boys and then like the 7, of the superheroes. So I don't know. I find it fascinating, and it's definitely one of the better shows on TV so far. And I freaking love Anthony Starr as Homelander, who's like amazing, and is playing like the American hero, yet he's from New Zealand. So I love that too. Like, you can pull off that, I guess, was like American douchebag very well.
He is so terrifying.
And I love Carl Urban. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he is so good. He's even better in this one. So I he deserves an Emmy nom next year.
Awesome. Rosa, have you seen the show?
No, I have not. So you're all speaking foreign language to me.
Okay. Yeah, well, we can keep on doing that, but I'll just say really quickly that I also love Jack Quaid in this.
Yes.
So he's such a funny character, and he has such this like aw shucksness about him that really works in a film or in a TV show that's otherwise very dour. Or not dour, but has a lot of bad people doing bad things. I think that Jack Quaid is a really good beacon of light in the show. Other than what's her name? The main girl.
Starlight.
Erin Moriarty. Yeah, she's also great. So yeah.
Yeah.
Love that. I'm really excited to check out season 2 and review that as well. So Rosa, what have you been watching?
Yes. So I've been watching, I watched a documentary called Robin's Wish. And it's a documentary that takes a look at the last days of actor and comedian Robin Williams. I remember seeing the trailer and being intrigued by it, but yet at the same time, I wasn't sure if I was ready to see a documentary this way. So I just try to be brave and just went ahead and watched it. And it gives the documentary, it gives a personal look to his life up until the day that he passes away. And throughout the documentary, there's interviews with his wife, his friends, neighbors, former colleagues, and doctors who they talk about the comedian, of course. And then they also go further into the disease that pretty much took away that affected Robin Williams, which was the diffuse Lewy body dementia. So it's more of an informative documentary, giving you like an insight into how this disease can affect anyone, and it doesn't discriminate and such. And it also is perhaps, to me, it was more of an answer and perhaps a response to all these media outlets that were just saying how the actor was just depressed and how he there were some people that were even saying that he suffered from domestic abuse from his own wife. So this film certainly opens your eyes into the disease. It brings a lot of awareness to it. And unfortunately, there's no cure to it. So also gives it's informative in that sense, in case you have relatives or anybody like that who's probably been misdiagnosed. And I enjoyed it. I very much not enjoyed it. I liked it for what it was. But it was, of course, I was in a puddle of my own tears towards the end, because relive his passing and how the media handled it and all that was, it brought back a lot of emotions. So overall, it's not an easy watch, but certainly an important one, especially for the to bring awareness to this disease.
Yeah, I didn't even know that he had a disease. I thought that, I mean, obviously I knew he was depressed, which is, of course, a disease, but I didn't know that he had a disease that was named like that, the Lewy bodies. So that seems really interesting. Is it on something? Is it VOD or?
Yeah, it should be VOD.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. And so you did say that it left you devastated. So this is not a curl up on a Friday night and enjoy it kind of movie. It's one of those.
Yeah, because it goes back to his entire career, and it does like a compare and contrast to how he was back at his peak in his career and towards the end of his career, especially the last film that he did, and how he was having issues like memorizing lines and just concentrating. And he even began to have these self-doubts. His confidence wasn't the same. So, I mean, now it makes more sense because of the diagnosis, but at the time they couldn't. They didn't realize what was going on. So, yeah, they go back and forth, and it's not an easy watch, but I would recommend seeing it.
Wow, okay. So that's Robin's Wish is the name of it, right? Robin's Wish, and that's on VOD. So the movie that I want to talk about is one that I know both of you have seen. It's the new Netflix film, I'm Thinking of Ending Things.
Jake, my boyfriend.
It's snowing.
Winter is coming in.
We have a real connection. A rare and intense attachment. I've never experienced anything like it. I'm thinking of ending things.
Huh?
What?
Did you say something?
I don't think so.
Weird.
I am very glad that this was not our main review, because I have no idea really what's going on in this movie. I think it's very intriguing. It's very captivating in a way that where a lot of movies that don't totally make sense can sometimes just be really boring and not make sense. I think that this movie is perplexing. It makes you think about a lot of things, but you also want to know what's going on throughout it. And I guess for people who don't know what this is the Charlie Kaufman movie that just came out on Netflix. It stars Jesse Plemons and Jesse Buckley. And this movie is about memory, sort of, I guess, is the non-spoiler way to say that. I really don't want to spoil too much about this at all, because I went into this movie knowing absolutely nothing. Like, I didn't know if it was a supernatural thing. I didn't know if it was a thriller. I didn't know if when they meet Toni Collette and David DeLuise that it was going to turn into a Get Out scenario. I had no idea what I was expecting about this movie, but I did find it very fascinating. I was very much captivated until roughly the last 30 minutes. I think that this is a movie where I wish it was just a little bit more explicit about what it all meant. And this is a movie that will make you go to Reddit and look up what is this? What is the meaning of this? And listen to podcast episodes about it and all of that stuff. And after I've listened to a couple of those things, I do now understand what's going on at least somewhat. But I did find myself a little frustrated that it was almost aggressively ambiguous by the end of it, in a way that it sort of felt like, I guess this is kind of a spoiler, so if you don't want to know anything about it, go ahead, because I'm going to compare it to another movie. But fast forward if you don't want to hear that. It kind of reminds me if the movie Fight Club did not explicitly tell you what the spoiler to that movie was. And the last 30 minutes, instead of them showing you what the twist is, they just like sang Oklahoma. So yeah. I don't know. It works for me for a while and then doesn't really work at the end. But what did you guys think about I'm Thinking of Ending Things?
I guess I can just say I'm a big Charlie Kaufman fan. And I realized, when I heard this movie was coming out, I was on another podcast talking about Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, because that movie I watched, in my heyday of high school and college and mid-20s and even now. And it's probably been one of the most like affecting movies, you know, like, movies that is just affects me in different ways every time I watch it. And I love some of his previous work as well. And I feel like he's just such a good writer in the sense that he's able to just tap into those human emotions of like, or like those like moments that I think we feel, and I'm just not eloquent enough to really talk about. And so I think I'm Thinking of Ending Things felt that way. Like, even though it is kind of meandering in some ways and you're like, what is the point of this? I'm like, I think I was just so enthralled with the fact that like, hey, these are some of the things I've been thinking about, not like specific, I don't know, like just throughout, like randomly. And I could never find a way to express them. And then there's just like moments where it's so simple and so accessible the way he says it. And I don't know if that is also because of the book it's based on. So, but anyway, like it still felt very Charlie Kaufman, and just like simple, you know, phrases that are in the movie that explain so much and that are so deep and rich. And it just like transcends it in my eyes. Like, I know I sound like a fan girl or whatever, but I just love writing like this, like that is able to really, and movies like that are really able to like just take what you have thought about in a way and then like really explain it and make you feel like you're connecting with it and you're not crazy. And even though this movie might make you feel a little crazy, I think it also makes you feel heard and seen in some ways, especially everything that's going on right now. I think, you know, feeling of loneliness, feeling of longing for like nostalgia and memories. I think that's everything that we're doing right now. And so I feel like it couldn't have come out at a better time. So I guess that's my long-winded version of saying I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Yeah, Rosa, did you enjoy it as well? I believe you did, right?
I loved it. Oh my, I love this film. And Kat and I discussed it over on our podcast. But yeah, the idea of and again, it's an artsy film. It's a mind-bending, like, thought-provoking film that it's not going to be for everybody. And that's fine. But the fact that this film got me thinking so much, it got me thinking about just all these philosophical themes that are so ordinary and they are so everyday things that we do that we don't even pay attention to them. We're so focused on other things that we don't sit down and think about our memory, our human relationships, our imagination, our perspectives, our perceptions, and all these things. And to see this film, I've only seen it once and it still had an impact. I'm still thinking about this film ever since I watched it. And just to have a film make me think about my own life, to make me think about my purpose in life and everything that's been going around from media and film and television and learn behaviors at home, learn behaviors at the workplace, and just everything in life, pretty much life. It's pretty darn fascinating. So if you cannot hear it in my voice, I love this film.
Yeah, I think fascinating is a really good word for the movie. And like you said, this movie is not going to be for everyone. And I think there's a line for everyone where a movie is just ambiguous enough that it demands its audience to be paying attention and it demands its audience to actually actively think about the movie. And then there's the other side of that line that is it's so ambiguous and confusing that to the point where it's like frustrating. And I think where that line is different for individual people. And I guess I just think that towards the end of this movie, because it rides that line for me perfectly for a very, very long time. And then towards the very end, I just wanted it to be like, no, this is, let me just show you. And maybe that's just the way that I watch movies or the type of movies. Like, this movie is nothing like Fight Club. I said it is like Fight Club, but they're trying to be two completely different things. This is not a twist movie. So maybe that's on me as the viewer. But yeah, I mean, regardless of how I felt about the ending, I think that the things that it explores, the ideas of what makes you you and where you get all of these things and the idea of being lonely and all of this stuff is really, really fascinating. So it's a very fascinating movie. And it also doesn't at all feel like a Netflix film because it feels like an individual's own movie. Like, it doesn't feel like Charlie budged at all with this movie. Feels like he included everything he wanted to. There's nothing missing. It's just he made the movie, and then if you like it, you like it. So I'm really glad you guys liked it. I guess I'd say I'm mildly positive on it, but would definitely recommend it if it's a movie that after you hear this, you feel like this is something that you want from a movie, right?
Yeah.
I love. This week for me was filled with so many trippy watches. I think I tweeted that out. I think it's kind of been mediocre. There's been some stuff, especially in TV, that have come out that I've been excited for, but this week really I saw Tenet. I saw this one. Even Mulan, it's something different. And then Raised by Wolves, the TV show, The Boys. Like, I was like, oh my god, this feels so. Like, I'm just in my happy place for the first time, I think, since we can't go to the theater. And I did go to the theater for a press only screening for Tenet. But that was like I probably won't be back again unless that happens, again. But yeah, I just think thought provoking is where I like to live with movies. Yes, of course, I like my action where I don't have to think too much. But when these gems come around, I'm like, yes, I want to talk about it. I want to watch it three times to figure it out. Like, it's a puzzle that I love when movies do that for you. Like, if it keeps you thinking afterwards, I feel like it's doing its job in some ways. Even if you hate it, even if you hate that aspect of it, it's cool that it got you to do that and you're angry about it. I think that just feeling something and making you think about something. I think sometimes we're so, especially now, we just want it given to us in some ways and we want the easy answer. And it's like, no, you got to think about it sometimes, you know, even if that means like think about it and I didn't like it, that's okay too. But just thinking is good.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we could probably talk about this movie for another hour. It's that complex, and we could do a spoiler section within our point two section, but let's not do that. Let's go ahead and end it on a very positive note. I'm really glad that things are coming out again. You know, there was a while where not a lot of stuff was coming out. If you look back to some of my episodes the last couple months, it's been like, shit, what do I talk about? There's literally nothing. So really excited to have these movies back regardless of how everybody feels about them. So this has been our review of Mulan. Rosa, Catherine, thanks so much for joining me. Thought this was awesome. And I'm really a big fan of what you guys are doing with the Latinx Lens podcast. I think that's great. Is there anything specific that you'd like to plug here?
Go ahead.
No, Monty, thank you so much for asking us to be here. It's been fun. It's been a treat. No, for me, just nothing. Nothing else. I've just listened to our newest episode of Latinx Lens, where Catherine and myself, we discuss some of the films we just talked about here, and then other films we reviewed as well. So yeah, just make sure you're following us, listen, like, share, retweet, rate us, comment, anything you can. We'd greatly appreciate it.
Yeah, I agree.
Awesome. Yeah.
Listen to our latest episode. We love engagement. So please let us know what you think. Just like we talked on this podcast, like, discussion is awesome. Whether we agree or not.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. I'll provide the link to the latest episode as well as both of your Twitters and the Latinx Lens podcast Twitter. So definitely give all of those a follow if you for some reason have not yet. The intro music for this episode is a piece called Work by Kevin MacLeod, and you can find more of his work at incompetech.com. If you'd like to keep up with this podcast and find out when we release new episodes, you can follow us on Twitter at MovieMaraPod or on Facebook at facebook.com/MovieMaraPod. That's Movie M-A-R-A Pod. And you can always reach out to us at our email, MovieMarathonersPod@gmail.com. You can find more episodes of this podcast at our website, evergreenpodcasts.com/movie-marathoners. And we are also on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, Spotify, Overcast, Himalaya, and CastBox. So please subscribe or write a review if you like what we're doing. And any feedback you have to help improve the podcast is always appreciated. So thank you all for listening, and we hope you'll join us again next time when I am joined by my girlfriend Dana to talk about Emmy 2020 predictions, snubs, and hopefuls. So stay tuned for that. Until then, bye.
Hi, this is comedian and writer, and let's be honest, I do a lot of things. This is Dean Archipotis, the host of Whiskey Business, the podcast not so much about whiskey as it is one with whiskey. Yes, we drink and talk about whiskey, but we do so much more with so many interesting people. For example, we talk to comedians like Greg Warren.
You know, I don't want to brag, but let's just say I can walk into a Red Lobster and get whatever. You know, I think the pause right there is probably more important than the word.
Amazing athletes like boxing champion Buster Douglas.
When a fighter's down and he's looking for his mouthpiece instead of trying to get up.
That's when I knew it was over.
Yeah, yeah. Right?
And yes, Bigfoot chasers.
Do you believe in Bigfoot? And if so, does he really eat beef jerky?
The Bigfoot thing is people have seen these, and I've seen a lot of compelling evidence about it.
It's Whiskey Business with Dean Archipotis. Join us for what we call a good conversation with a good pour. You really can't ask for much more than that, can you, people? Check us out at WhiskeyBusinessPod.com, a proud member of the Evergreen Podcast Network.